Next items are going to be related to the CEIP. Carla, could you please read items 1213, 1214, and 1215?
1213, adopt the Community Equity and Inclusion Plan for all City of Portland public improvements contracts that utilize alternative contracting methods and have estimated contract values of $10 million to $25 million and require consideration of modified community benefits agreements for public improvement contracts with estimated contract values in excess of $25 million. 1214, direct the Bureau of Revenue and Financial Services Procurement Service Division to develop and implement a contract delivery method selection process for public improvement projects with construction contracts estimated at $10 million and over. And 1215, direct the Office of Management and Finance and the Office of Equity and Human Rights to develop a community opportunities and enhancements program and funding plan.
Longest title ever.
Yes, that was a long title.
Mayor, before we hit the merits of this, can I just do a housekeeping matter?
Yes, sir.
This is scheduled for 2 hours. If history is a guide, it might go longer because usually there's a lot of people who want to be heard. We have an executive session scheduled at 2, and we've been working without a meal break today. So I guess the two questions I have that I wanted to raise with you are, do you intend for there to be a brief lunch break prior to 2?
Yes.
And is it your intention to push the executive session back a half an hour?
That's a great question. Why don't we hold off on the second question? The answer to number one is yes. Let's hold off on number two and see how we go. I don't think this will take the 2 hours that has been predicted.
Okay.
And so let's see how we go. So, colleagues, today we're continuing the conversation we started at City Council in July regarding the city's work on social equity and contracting. And as you'll recall, at that July Council hearing, we heard from many people, and we heard from you on your desire to include the community benefits agreement in the city's toolkit of items to address historical inequities in contracting in the workplace. Since July, we have continued those discussions, and we're now at a point where I believe that we have the additional tools to ensure that the city will increase our utilization of certified firms and support a diverse workforce in the construction trades. I am personally committed to supporting and promoting social equity in contracting, and today we have the ability to pass resolutions that exemplify that commitment. The Community Equity and Inclusion Plan and the City of Portland Community Benefit Agreement create a citywide framework that allows for common expectations and approaches to achieving our city's stated equity goals. There is now a consistency and predictability in the approach that the city plans to take on public improvement projects. This will better serve all of us in the community, those who contract with us and our community partners who work every day to ensure the success of minorities and women in the workplace. Our intent and deliverables remain exactly the same. We're working to achieve equity. This is a living, breathing document that can be adjusted to meet our needs. And I want to underscore that again. It is a living, breathing document that can be adjusted to meet our needs. Before we hear from staff invited testimony and take some public testimony, we have a couple of procedures to follow since there have been changes since we last discussed these items in July. First, I move to return the previously heard item, which was numbered 798, and substitute with the new resolution, item number 1213. Is there a second?
Second.
There's a second. Carla, please call the roll.
Udaly?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Wheeler?
Aye. So we are now discussing the substitute resolution. We're going to hear from staff today, then we're going to hear some invited testimony. Finally, we'll open this up for public testimony. At the end of this, we're going to vote on each of the three resolutions independently as we are required to do. Commissioner Saltzman, I understand you have a comment you wanted to make about an amendment you had on the floor.
Yes. Thanks. Thank you, Mayor. And I appreciate the discussion and the work that has been done by all of our offices and all involved to bring this substitute proposal forward today. Which now contains the amendment I had offered in July that requires a modified CBA, Community Benefits Agreement, for projects over $25 million. But I also offered another amendment that I'd like to have offered on the floor right now, and that was to increase the workforce apprenticeship requirement threshold from jobs of $100,000 to jobs of $300,000 or greater.
I'll second that.
Okay, thank you.
We have a motion from Saltzman, a second from Fish.
And the reason I'm doing that is data from procurement services show that over the past two fiscal years, 92% of apprenticeship training programs are occurring on jobs that are over $300,000. And it's important. Workforce apprenticeship is very important, but I do think for small jobs of $100,000 or, you know, even now from $100,000 to $300,000, the workforce apprenticeship requirement can impose a significant burden on smaller businesses competing for city dollars and city jobs. So that's why I'm offering that amendment today, and pleased to have it seconded.
Very good, and we'll keep that open for testimony purposes for future questions. Any further amendments anybody wants to put on the table right now? So I'm going to turn this over to staff, Tom and Dante and Tiffany, and you heard the challenge time-wise, so just the basics, please. Tom?
Mayor, commissioners, my name is Tom Reinhardt. I'm proud to be the city's chief administrative officer. I was already planning before the mayor admonished me to change the time based on Commissioner Fish's comments. My erudite writing here and testimony, I will significantly shorten. The resolutions before you today, as you know from the work that your staffs have done with us, have been crafted with thorough evaluation and vetting with community members. And they are strong, collectively a very strong step forward in the work we must do to expand opportunities for female and minority members of our community, both via workforce and contracting opportunities. In short, our organization is a major driver of construction work, and the accompanying opportunities for contractors and construction workers should be expanded to all. We're asking you today to approve three resolutions, and I'm going to walk briefly through them. Item 1213 applies the CEIP, which you have heard a lot about, to alternate procurements between $10 and $25 million. The CEIP has aggressive goals for both female and minority contractor participation, as well as workforce goals. The resolution directs procurement to apply our updated community benefit agreement template as well to all public improvement contracts estimated above $25 million. That's the first one. Number two, item 1214. It's a contract delivery method selection process. It directs the Office of Management and Finance and the Bureau of Revenue and Financial Services to develop an alternative to low-bid contracting, which this alternative will make it easier to meet our goals and be crafted specifically to do that. Item 1215, the Community Opportunities and Enhancement Program and Funding Plan. The basics on this, it's the 1% fund that you've heard about, 1% from all city construction projects dedicated toward workforce development and technical assistance to support certified firms to successfully bid on our projects. So that's the one, two, and three of that very complex package in your packets. I want to address one other item that's come up repeatedly, and that is that accompanying these resolutions is an accountability and reporting structure to ensure compliance and transparency. We firmly believe that we've worked very hard to respond to concerns that the city will once again make good efforts on paper, but we won't hold ourselves accountable. We are intent on having a very solid oversight committee with community participation, but that the city will own that oversight, that you will hold us accountable, we will hold our bureaus accountable, and that we will continually look at how we're performing, and as the mayor said, if we need to make changes, we will make them. Now I will turn it over to my colleague, Director Dante James, to briefly outline the history and what's changed since the earlier presentation.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Mayor, commissioners, it is certainly my pleasure to be here and hopefully reach a resolution to this in a way that is of benefit to everyone. Is this a perfect document? No. Is it a document that I think everyone is willing to say is a much better document than has been presented before? I believe that answer will be yes, that you will hear from others when they speak. In short, you know, we are here because our goal was to truly improve the document that was presented before. And just a brief summary of the process that we've gone through since the most recent submission to you. There was a small group of stakeholders that met to take the CEIP and review it and attempt to modify it and address the concerns that were raised by the community during testimony and by some of you at the presentation. There was discussion around Commissioner Saltzman's amendment, as you're aware, which then brought us to the modified, which essentially is now the City of Portland's CBA document. The goals and the language were again modified based on that feedback. The threshold at which the CEIP is applied was changed, and it will now be at $10 million from $10 to $25 million. And then the language of the City of Portland, I'll be official, the City of Portland CBA was also modified to bring it into consistency with the language that's within the CEIP. The changes made specifically to that City of Portland CBA was the 1% was removed because of this specific and separate presentation or resolution coming before you. The language of the LMCOC, which is the CEIC, was changed to make it consistent with the CEIP language and making it specifically an advisory body that will provide recommendations and review of the work going on. And again, the goals within the document were disaggregated around apprenticeship, workforce, and subcontracting to again make it consistent with the CEIP. So those are essentially the high-level distinctions and changes that were made since the last presentation to you. And finally, if I could just make a comment on Commissioner Saltzman's amendment, I absolutely agree that it's a conversation that needs to be had. I don't disagree at all that $100,000 is problematic for many small, certainly minority and women-owned businesses. Just as a piece of information, we had this conversation at the Fair Contracting Forum, and it was presented to them that they may, in fact, be able to offer their comments and recommendations on it. So I just want to make it clear that if, in fact, the amendment goes through, and I believe the evidence is fairly compelling that that probably is the right number, but not for me to say, but that the Fair Contracting Forum was also expecting to be able to weigh in on that. So just as a piece of information, I don't want that to be lost.
And I appreciate you saying that because I did mean to say that when I was offering my amendment that, yes, the Fair Contracting Forum should take a look at it, but in that interim, we should have a higher threshold. Mm-hmm. And as the mayor said, this is a living, breathing document, so I expect we'll revisit it again.
Appreciate that. So in short, those are the distinctions from the last time the presentation was made. I'm happy to answer any questions and or find other folks who can get more deeply. And then now I'll turn it over to Tiffany Penson.
Hi, Mayor and Commissioners. Tiffany Penson, Procurement Services. On behalf of the City of Portland, we would like to thank all of the individuals, organizations, and community members for their feedback on the proposed Community Equity Inclusion Plan. Your input has been very helpful, and we appreciate your time and commitment to this project. Starting in 2016, Dante James and I spent 7 months reaching out to a wide range of people, including the unions, construction firms, apprenticeship programs, City of Portland committees, and individual community members. We contacted a total of 42 organizations and individuals via phone and email, met with 21 of the 42 in person, and received written feedback from 22 of the 42 organizations and individuals. In addition, we also met extensively with Maui members Kelly Haynes, Michael Birch, Willie Meyer, Connie Ashbrook, Pat Daniels, and 9 of the Maui organizations, also NAMCO, MCIP. So we had a variety of people at the table. We would like to note that we did not start from scratch with the Community Equity and Inclusion Plan, but used the previous work that was implemented at the city as it relates to contracting in an effort to standardize and improve the city's plan. Again, thank you all for your commitment to the process. We truly are better together.
Thank you, all three of you. If nobody has any questions at this particular juncture, we've got several invited guests, 2 panels worth, and I'd like to go ahead and invite them up.
Mayor, we'll stay if there's any questions after.
Yeah, I would appreciate it if you would do that. So the first panel is Willie Myers, the Executive Secretary and Treasurer of the Columbia Pacific Building Trades Council. I see Willie here. Kelly Haynes, Coordinator of the Metropolitan Alliance for Workforce Equity. There's Kelly. She's hiding behind the column. And Ranfi Villatoro is the Associate Director of Professional Business Development. Thank you all for being here. We appreciate it. And I should say the folks on these two invited panels have worked tirelessly to help us hammer out language that works. So thank you for your contributions and your dedication to this. Willie, if you want to start.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Mayor, City Council. I appreciate the opportunity to come and talk to you today. I'd like to start off by thanking the mayor's office and the staff that through your leadership, we've gone a long ways down this road to finally having substantive language that is actually going to affect the change that we need to make, both in contracting equity and workforce. We've gone way past window dressing to actually having a policy that works. And I appreciate the efforts that you've put in and the leadership that you've shown to get us to where we needed to be today. As I would like to speak real quickly to the Saltzman Amendment, I don't believe that a $300,000 captures, something that you could just say at $300,000 you're automatically exempt from following apprenticeship rules. I think that would I would like to ask that be referred back to the Fair Contractors Board for determination, the Fair Contracting
Forum.
Excuse me. So it's transparent in the process. It's not an automatic. You're exempt. You request to the Fair Contracting Board, the forum, to have that exemption. And then it's discussed whether or not there's sufficient apprenticeable hours on that project that justifies having the apprenticeship requirement or the other aspirational goals, so we don't miss the aspirational goals that we're trying to attempt with both the CEIP and the CBA.
So could I ask my colleague a question on this? Commissioner Saltzman, is it your intent that this be a placeholder number and that we could engage the Fair Contracting Forum when we have more data to see if this is the right number?
Yes. As I just was in my court exchange with Dante James just a second ago, this number, I believe, is an improvement. And as the data shows, 92% of all the jobs that we award are $300,000 or greater. So
yeah, for the city.
Yeah, for the city. So, yeah, I think we need to raise the threshold, but I am open to the input of the Fair Contracting Forum. I'm not sure whether, that's probably down the road, but I'm not sure whether it's necessarily a contractor or a potential contractor should have to go to this forum to
get the exemption?
Yeah. I don't know about that part, but I guess I'd like the $300,000 to be adopted by the council because it is necessary, I believe. And we're subject to hearing more feedback from the Fair Contracting Forum and change.
Could I add?
Commissioner Fish.
So one of the things that I've appreciated about this process is that you have folks at the table that haven't always been at the table talking to each other, working out their differences. It was important to the building trades and others that the $25 million be a hard trigger. When I heard the arguments, and by the way, the bulk of the projects we're talking about are going to be within my portfolio, so I have a keen interest in getting this right, but probably $500 million of CBAs are going to run through the utilities. When the question came up of the hard trigger, it seemed to me that clarity and having a clear standard made more sense than revisiting this all the time. And the reality is, there's only about three projects in the next 2 years that we already know in advance are going to qualify. So I think we can be clear about that. What I also learned, though, was it was important to our friends in the minority contracting community that we revisit this exemption, which had not changed since 1997. And the $100,000 has really, over time, just eroded in terms of any meaningful value. What I was persuaded was that because, again, of this partnership that you forged at the table, Willie, and you and Nate and others, that if we're going to do the hard trigger, I thought I agreed with Dan that I thought we should lift the floor on the exemption, recognizing that we're going to make lots of changes on this. And
right.
And you've raised a very important point, which is there an unintended consequence of raising the exemption which works against our MWESB goals around the contracts in the $10 to $25 million range?
Right.
And I think we have to take a look at it. But for purposes of bringing this package together and I think respecting the various voices we've heard, I think it's important to have a placeholder number, and that's why I'll support Dan on the 300,000. And it taking nothing away from the concerns you raised, because it could cause us to revisit the details.
Yeah, I'm not opposed to the amendment. I just would like to have like a safety catch there that we don't miss those opportunities with the fair contracting forum. I'm not opposing raising that threshold. I'm just asking that we have that safety catch. Because of the transitory nature of our industry, we go from job to job to job, and a lot of our smaller local contractors do less than $200,000 or $300,000 contracts consistently. They just don't bid bigger than that on some of the subcontractors of the crafts that I represent. And so it's very apprenticeable. those hours are very apprenticeable. They do it consistently. And some of them, that's all they bid on. So some of the local contractors. So I just don't want to I don't think that it's a blanket exemption from apprenticeship requirements, because there's going to be several that have apprentices. Why not capture that data and prove that we're doing what we're intending to do and capture our aspirations that we've set on all these projects? So thank you.
Very good. Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. I guess good afternoon now.
Yeah,
huh?
Sorry. Yeah. By the way, so I think I will take Commissioner Fish up on his offer to move the executive session to 2:30.
Okay, and Mayor, when will we be taking a 10-minute lunch break?
After this is done, we will take a break. I'd like to dispose of the one agenda item that was called off of the consent agenda.
Okay.
And then I think we'll do is we'll discuss with the council clerk which items we're going to move to where, and I have sort of a tentative list here. Great. Sorry to interrupt, Kelly. I apologize.
You got to have your lunch. Please. I'm Kelly Haynes. I represent the Metropolitan Alliance for Workforce Equity. Would you guys prefer that I speak to the amendment first and then the motions, or the other way around?
Doesn't matter.
Either way. So I'll get straight to the amendment first, just to clear that up, and then I'll go into my support of the resolutions. I will just say I do think that amendment would probably serve better within the Fair Contracting Forum as a place to have due process and discussion about more research on how it may also impact the workforce and real career pathways for people. So that would be my recommendation, and I think I'm not opposed to the idea, but I think pushing it through now at City Council is a little bit premature. Having been at the October Fair Contracting Forum meeting, that group was told that decision was ongoing and that we would revisit it at the January meeting or February. So I just would say that I think it's a premature decision, but I think it's worth discussing in the future and maybe in that forum amongst those stakeholders. Okay. So now I'll go into the resolutions. So thank you, Commissioners and Mayor Wheeler, for the opportunity to speak on this very important issue. I represent Maui, which is a historic partnership between the carpenters, operating engineers, laborers, other unions, construction contractors, pre-apprenticeship programs, and community-based organizations. We work to promote economic opportunity and equity in workforce and contracting and develop practical strategies to address historic inequities in the region. And as you're aware, you know, these partners developed Portland's first community benefits agreement, along with you all, to create a framework for shared community oversight and accountability, fair labor standards, and goals and resources to increase contracting and workforce opportunities for historically underserved community members. We are united in the belief that the benefits of the city's investments must be broadly shared, focused particularly on achieving equitable outcomes for communities who have historically been burdened by or currently experience displacement from public investments and development. To be clear, we continue to have significant concerns regarding the CEIP, but we've already articulated those in the past on public record, so I'm not going to focus on that today. Instead, I'll focus on how excited we are about pursuing the community benefits agreement going forward on projects over $25 million. It is a proven tool that has produced tangible and impressive results. It's also based on best practices from around the country, the city of Seattle, Boston, and LA, among other areas. And as you know, the city's past CBA pilots achieved impressive and tangible results. 26% of the revenue was earned by minority and women-owned companies. Of the 68 contractors who worked on the project, 60% were non-union of the MWDBEs. And for Kelly Butte, 50% of the apprentice hours were worked by minorities, 28% by women, 29% of the journey hours were worked by minorities. So these projects exceeded and double and triple sometimes nearly all the goals. So I think today these are really critical policy decisions to consider for the city. And to be clear, they have real impact for working people, women and communities of color who, through achieving goals on public capital projects, have the opportunity to have real careers in construction, grow their wealth, and lift themselves into highly skilled trades, or to grow small businesses into larger outfits here locally. So I've shared with you, I think you may have them, and in our public testimony, a stack of postcards and photos that we have already mailed to Mayor Wheeler to demonstrate the amount of impact and positive support you have from over 230 local working people on the CBA being the best tool to adopt. I want to ensure that you understand that I'm not here speaking only for myself or even for the over 20 organizations that are a part of Maui, but also the nearly 200,000 constituents that we collectively represent. So please take the time to read those stories. They represent many people who are at work today, so they couldn't come to tell you all in person how important these policy decisions are for their families, their livelihoods, and the real impact that they have on their everyday lives in this city. So community and labor are looking forward to working shoulder to shoulder with you to ensure that this tool is successful in replicating past CBA outcomes on more public projects. We are with you in addressing the historical and current disparities in construction and on large public projects by implementing the CBA tool. So we're here today to thank you for your continued support of the proven model of the CBA. Through these resolutions, you are strengthening the ability of city bureaus to apply it to all alternative procurement projects over $25 million. And this is a critically positive step in the right direction, and we applaud your leadership.
Thank you for your testimony. Good morning. Afternoon, sorry.
Yeah. Good afternoon, Mayor, Commissioners. Thank you for allowing me to be able to testify here today. My name is Rainfeast Giannettino Viatoro. I'm the Associate Director with Professional Business Development Group, PBDG. So I wear many hats, but today strictly on with PBDG. We represent approximately 30 to 40 women and minority-owned construction firms and professional services, firms that are, you know, either general contractors, subcontractors, folks who do electrical, sheet metal, HVAC, landscaping, et cetera. And we're a membership dues-paying organization. We have bi-monthly membership meetings. Next one that's coming up is November 15th. City staff, agency, other bureaus, staff are welcome to attend those meetings and network with our members, as well as share opportunities that are coming down the pipeline. But I'm here to testify in support of the CBA and some of the values that are in play for PBDG come down to opportunity, equity, and justice in the face of historical inequity, inclusion, collaboration, partnership, transparency, and accountability and consistency. In a perfect world, we would not be here today. We would not have to be talking about a community benefit agreement to ensure equity and inclusion, not only for contractors, minority contractors and women contractors, but also the workforce. But we are here today. And I want to thank members of the commission for being leaders on this policy. A lot of my members believe that they're capable of doing the work when it comes to city projects. Some are still building their capacity to do these projects. But one of the things that some of the biggest barriers they face to be able to do work in the city of Portland, and I mean broadly, not just within the city government, is opportunity. And, you know, CBA, the Community Benefit Agreement, has been a proven model to ensure opportunity, inclusion. Some of my members, if it were not for the two pilot projects, the technical assistance, the 1%, would not have been able to participate on those projects. And so it's really a big priority for us to weigh in and ensure this passage, and we applaud the city's measure to this. But, you know, some of the things that I think values that we see in play with the CBA that I've highlighted is, you know, equity, the idea of being able to create goals for contractors that's ensured actual outcomes. That's a big thing that the city's been able to accomplish, the CBA. Collaboration. We represent contractors. However, it's been very beneficial for us to interact with labor, though we might not agree with them every day, pre-apprenticeship programs, and other technical advisors to best understand the other side. I think we're very knowledgeable on our trades and skills, but it's really beneficial to hear the needs of the workforce. And that's not the hat that we wear. Transparency. Being able to have transparent data on the outcomes, having frequent meetings, that has led to meaningful engagement and meaningful outcomes. When I look at members and at our members in areas that we feel like we've been meaningfully engaged, it's been when there is transparent data that's on time and when we know those meetings are going to occur consistently. And unfortunately, you know, we have not seen that across the board in other agencies. So I want to applaud the city and their effort with this community benefit agreement and continuing that model. Accountability and consistency. You know, I think the CBA sets clear standards. And as contractors, I won't say this every day, but we should be held to a high standard when it comes to the goals, when it comes to the workforce and contracting. And I think when the city rewards high roads contractors, I believe our members benefit because it's ensuring that there's an equal playing field to ensure that all contractors are playing with the same rules and that the city is rewarding those contractors who are doing the right thing consistently day in and day out. And I believe my members are doing that. So that's one thing and benefit that I see from the community benefit agreement. So I want to thank the city and the leadership. When it comes to the proposed amendment, you know, I hope that the council will take some time to have the opportunity to allow my members to weigh in. This is the first time that I don't think my members have been able to weigh in on this. When I've heard about barriers for small firms to be able to compete, it really boils down to technical assistance and being able to have funding to be able to build the capacity to do bidding and estimating. And so I want to ensure that, you know, we get down to the value of the amendment and see other options to ensure that, you know, we are offering those opportunities for businesses, small firms to grow. I'll conclude with this by taking a quote from President John F. Kennedy on equity. And, well, I'll paraphrase here, but we choose to go to the moon on equity and inclusion in this decade and do other things, not because they are easy, but because they are hard, because the goal will serve to organize and measure the best of our energies and skills, because that challenge is one that we are willing to accept, one we are willing to postpone, and one which we intend to win. So I want to thank again the commission for being a leader on this, and I hope we continue to look at the CBA as a living document. Thank you very much.
Thank you, and I appreciate all three of your testimony. Excellent. Thanks. Thank you. Our last panel, John Jensen, political representative from IBEW 48, Chris Carpenter, who is the Aaron Barber is here. Aaron Barber Strong, who's the organizer from IBEW, and Pat Daniels, who's the executive director of Constructing Hope Pre-Apprenticeship Program. Welcome, and thank you for being here.
Thank you very much, Mayor Wheeler. And first of all, let me start with some thanks for all of the commissioners and your staffs, your availability to speak on this and directing your staffs to work on this. I know there was a lot of time spent working on this. Particularly the mayor staff for taking point on this and really doing the hard work, bringing everyone together and making sure we come to a resolution here. In addition, all of the other city workers that aren't in your staffs, I know there's been a lot of work and attention put on this issue recently. I feel it's worth it. Workers are very important. Well, two issues, the equity and diversity are very important, and also underneath that, just taking attention to workforce and how we spend our public dollars. A special thanks for the CBA. We represent about 4,500 electrical workers here in the region. Local 48 has been home in Portland, Oregon for over 100 years, and it means the world to our members to be able to build the community, to build the infrastructure that makes up all of our lives. So that means a great deal to our members, and thanks for having that hard threshold that triggers working with our representatives. And then to end, we just couldn't be more supportive of these diversity efforts here. We fully support these actions you're taking that are going to promote more equity and diversity in both contracting and workforce. So after that, we're just excited to go forward, build these projects here with Commissioner Fish, and try to deliver some of the best projects and some great infrastructure for our city. So thank you very much.
Good afternoon.
Hello. My name is Aaron Barber Strong. I'm a business agent for the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, Local 48. Moving forward, I will call it the IBEW for this place here. I'd just like to recognize you, Mayor, and the commissioners, and thank you all for your help and everyone who has been part of this whole project for this language. It's very important to us. I feel proud that I was able to go back to a meeting tonight and talk about what happened here today. To some very proud members and tell them we made some very good progress. So I would definitely like to thank you and recognize that. To kind of jump off of what John said, with our 4,500 members here at Local 48, they also live in the city as well, the majority of them. We have about 15% of our membership who live in outlying areas that don't quite commute to Portland, but the majority of our membership do live in Portland. So this directly impacts the majority of our membership. So just thank you for the work, and hopefully we can continue to work together.
Thank you. We appreciate it. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mayor Wheeler and City Council Commissioners. My name is Pat Daniels, and I'm the Executive Director of Constructing Hope Pre-Apprenticeship Training Program. And we would like to thank you also for adopting the applying a proven model of the CBA that includes a broad community of support in projects that's over 25,000. Constructing Hope provides training to all of our participants, our 100% low income. And when we look at that, 75% of them are minorities. When we look at providing a diverse workforce, I'd like to thank you for this process, but also just talk a little bit about the 1% that supports pre-apprenticeship training. When you think about pre-apprenticeship, not only are we providing workers, but I want to share just a quick little story. One of our graduates completed our program in 2010. Once he entered the trade, and he became an iron worker. After becoming an iron worker last year in 2016, he started a company. So I just wanted to say to you that the 1% that you're providing, which is for pre-apprenticeship, provides a pipeline for not only diverse workers, but it also provides a pipeline for diverse contractors. So I just want to say that we are very impressed and very pleased that you decided to pass this project that includes the 25%, 25 million. We are very happy that you are passing this proven model to support projects over 25 million, and just let you know that the impact to the community is great. So again, it's not just the workforce, it's also providing a diverse level of contractors. And also, when you look at the whole process, the economic impact to the community, I just wanted to say, when you look at the pre-apprenticeship training programs, most of our clients are 100% low income. They're starting in career trades that start at $18 an hour. That changes their lives tremendously, and now you have people that are paying back and contributing to the community. So again, thank you for looking at the whole process, and thank you for making these decisions.
Very good. And before we get to the formal public test, thank you all for your testimony. We sure appreciate it. The next three before we get to the public is Nate McCoy, Maurice Reming, and Kelly Kupchak. Come on up.
I guess I'll start out. Good morning, Mayor, Commissioners. Thank you for having me this afternoon. I'm a little bit puzzled on, I guess, my remarks. I thought I was a little bit more hopeful this morning coming in. I definitely think there's been some commentary that I'm not ready to you know, more or less support or kind of put an opinion on, because I don't think some of the facts you just heard from the last panel are accurate. And I'll just quickly highlight a couple things that I heard that I'm still kind of puzzled about. So what I know about the CBA projects is that, yes, they have hit high numbers in regards to the workforce. But if you remember last year, Commissioner Nick Fish, we also asked, can we see the retention rates on those folks who actually got in? Because we had the pretty presentation last year of the folks who got in, but we didn't see any information on the folks who actually either graduated out or who are still retained in the workforce. And I know data, too, and I know continuing a lot longer than the last 5 years of when the CBAs were intact, that minorities continue to be the highest unemployed in our nation. So if we are the model of choice to use CBAs in this city, I would ask, and this is more for you guys to take a look at, show us the merits of what's really happening on the back end. Show us the merits of the non-union contractors working on the CBA projects, because what you typically see is a lot of union contractors working on these projects. And the stats that were thrown out about DBE and other acronyms, you can go to the state list and look at all the DBE certified contractors, and you'll see a majority of that rounding out for white women firms. So let's not lump everything together until we get to the level of disaggregating CBAs from anything else. We're just talking. And I know 50 members, NAMAC members that reside within our constituency who have some worked on CBAs and some who just stay away from CBAs. And at the end of the day, what I think the city is looking for, leadership, equity stakeholders, is something that blends the two. And I think that's what we have in front of us today. And I would encourage us to approve this because I think we have done a lot of great work in this regards. But what I think, you know, again, always gets missed in these opportunities is to do what we're talking about, creating the CEIC, which I commend. We should have a committee. But I think it was mentioned in the last segment about potential conflicts of interest, stacking the deck, as Nick said earlier. I'm in these meetings, and I'm the only advocate, if you will, that I hear talking about non-union contractors and how do they work on these projects. And I'm on the Multnomah County Courthouse stuff. I'm on pretty much everything, and I still don't see it. I see very minimal opportunities for minority contractors, and it was Amanda Fritz last year who cited City of Portland with MBE utilization, on average, see contracts of no more than, I want to say, $80,000 a year. What are we talking about? I don't understand the information that we're looking at. And I don't think it's being done in a collective manner to where I can go back to my constituents and say that this is true or this is false. And so until we get to the point of having real tracking, real data from City of Portland, not from stakeholders who, you know, I'm not going to say people manipulate information, but it happens, to paint the pretty story, I'm not willing to drink the Kool-Aid. And I hope that our council isn't either until we get this level of information. In regards to the workforce training program, I wasn't the one who sponsored the data. It was City of Portland who sponsored the data to suggest this year and last year alone, they've exempted the highest rate of minority contractors at those lower hanging fruit levels to where apprentices are killing them on their projects. Take an apprentice and put them out on the site with a small contractor, and unless they're skilled or ready and issues happen on a project, on any project, they can't absorb the cost of correcting work, doing all these other things that I think just make no sense if we only have an apprentice on site for, on average, a week, 2 weeks at most. How is that showing that we have an incentive and are marketing to those contractors who don't currently work with City of Portland today? It sends a missed message to me and to our members if we don't course correct that. And I know contracting forum is absolutely the place where we can take that up. I'm not willing to take a pass on the $300,000 new limit, and I commend Dan Saltzman and other commissioners for weighing in, and I hope we can support and move that forward as well as the triggers. One quick thing, and then I will shut up and let others. As we think about a reassemblage of potentially the CIC morphing into the contracting forum group, I'd be remiss if I didn't say that the current members on there should absolutely weigh in on any potential new members, because groups at the table, or groups that aren't represented at the table that should be, are folks that aren't more or less kind of union focused. So I'm going to name a couple. ABC, Northwest College of Construction, NAIA, who has a construction program already intact at NAIA, and then Living Cully, who was doing a lot of construction work. And maybe in some ways they relate to the CBA processes, but they're not at the table as I'm at. And I feel like to have a well-rounded group, we need to make sure that there's other voices so I'm not the only voice voting on something that everybody else isn't. It becomes too much of a challenge to have all these projects and not enough minority voices at the table. So with that said, I will also mention real quickly one last thing that I saw within the way we're looking at the DBE lumped with DMWESB. That could present a federal issue because, as we all know, DBE is a standalone program. And the fact that we're talking about a 12% slice for minority or DBE, I think we need to be very careful about what that looks like, because this is the first time City of Portland's ever really captured the DBE program into their current MWESB program. And so we have some folks within NAMAC's team that have legal opinions on how that looks and how we should maybe disaggregate that portion of DBE percentages on the project as a set-aside. So stuff, again, that we can bring up for a later date, but want to get back to the DBE is not just minority-specific. It's other categories that are already represented on MWESB. So thank you.
Very good. Excellent testimony. Thank you. Sure.
Good afternoon. Thank you, Mayor Wheeler and commissioners, for the opportunity to present today. My name is Kelly Kupchak. I'm the executive director of Oregon Transwomen, and as a recent transplant to Portland from a community that where I was deeply involved with community benefits agreement, it is really refreshing and promising to see the city committed to the discussion and engagement of the community. So I applaud you on that. Thank you. Oregon Tradeswomen would like to applaud the city for its decision to utilize the community benefits agreement for projects over $25 million. While the conditions in our industry have improved, we know that people of color and women and other disadvantaged businesses continue to face barriers in the constructing industry with employment and contracting opportunities. Oregon Tradeswomen has worked since our inception in 1989 to advocate for access, opportunity, and equity in our industry. And as a member of the Metropolitan Alliance for Workforce Equity, we remain committed to ensuring economic opportunity and in both in workforce and contracting, and to develop practical strategies to address those historic inequities. Communities across this nation have employed community benefits agreements as a now best practice model, and we strongly support the continued and diligent shared community oversight and accountability for the CBA. We want to thank the City of Portland for recognizing this proven model, and we know that, and Kelly Haynes previously shared the statistics around the successes of the other projects, so I won't repeat those today, but we know that these outcomes demonstrate that with intention, commitment, and collaboration, we can create a shared prosperity for all our community members. We do hope that the City will continue to employ additional best practices around the decision-making authority of the labor Healthcare Management Community Oversight Committee, and that funding the Community Opportunity Advancement Program in order to provide the necessary resources to support successful outcomes in the CBA, which include outreach, recruitment, mentoring, quality training, including and ensuring that they're BOLI recognized pre-apprenticeship training programs and the technical assistance. We also hope that there will be an opportunity to support Commissioner Saltzman's proposed amendment back to the Fair Contracting Forum to look at those thresholds to ensure that workforce equity is addressed in there. And again, Oregon Tradeswomen is continued to partnering and supporting, working with the city to ensure the CBAs are successful. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Hi, I'm Maurice Roming, President of O'Neill Electric. So I'd like to thank the mayor and the commissioners for allowing me to speak. We know that there's over 10,000 construction jobs available in the state right now, and we know that the CBA is a proven pathway out of poverty for people. That's been proven. We also know it has the greatest utilization for women and minorities to not only participate as contractors, but also in the workforce. So I want to make sure that with that in mind, that some of the things that was said earlier, I agree that you should do your due diligence. You should look up in the information. BOLI keeps this on record. You could see the retention of minorities and women through all the apprenticeship programs and who is actually doing the best as far as retaining minorities, African Americans, women alike. So you'll be able to track that and you'll be able to see it by discipline. So I suggest that all of you look at that direction first. As far as looking at the contractors, I think the city should try to look at those contractors that are participating, those women and minority contractors that are participating in your programs, and ask them how they're doing, what is the barriers. One of the things that was mentioned about raising the threshold for apprentices, I do have concern with that. I came through an apprenticeship program. If you raise the barriers, that means there's less access for people like me to be able to get to where I'm at. We've heard from Pat Daniels, where she talks about the person being able to work as an apprentice. As you increase the threshold from 100 to 300 to half a million, that means that there's less apprentices participating on these construction jobs. I think we'd be doing ourselves a disservice for women and minorities if we go in that direction. It might help a few minority contractors, but it will hurt a vast group of minorities and women in general. You're removing their ability to participate. And when you talk about removing the availability to participate, you'll hear that from minority contractors, but we cannot forget the minority and women workforce. Like I said, 10,000 jobs. We have to allow them access to be able to participate. We have to allow them access to be able to finish their apprenticeship programs, become journeymen, become contractors like myself. I lived in poverty. I understand that. I do not want to see us restrict people to move from poverty to success. That would be doing a disservice to not only our community, but our people. Thank you.
Can I just ask you a question? Because we keep going back to the forum and wanting to have the discussion there. So the forum got a presentation from the city that showed that over 92% of contracts would not be affected by raising the exemption. And it is documented. There's contracts and data. So if do you dispute that data? Was the data presented by the city viewed skeptically or not? And if that data is sound, that seems to me it gives us a factual basis to make an adjustment on an exemption, which, frankly, had it just been indexed for inflation since 1997, would probably be closer to 300. So what's your response to that? Because the data was very compelling, was presented to the forum in the right way. It was documented. I've reviewed that data, and I think it's perfectly clear about the impact of raising the floor, but you have actually flipped the data and said just the reverse.
Well, one of the things, I was in that forum, actually, I was supposed to be invited to that forum. I have not been invited yet as far as an ECPC or member of that commission. But what I would sit there and say is this. If we remove one opportunity from a minority or woman or an apprentice from being able to participate on a project, we are doing a disservice. And so that would be my...
So what I would just say to my friend is, let's make sure you get that PowerPoint and all the data, because okay. You've been data-driven in all your presentations to us. Mm-hmm. Let's have you look at it. And if the council's will is to lift the exemption to 300 and you think it's too high, too low, needs to be modified in some way, let's use that data and come back and tell us we got it wrong.
I'll be happy to do that, but like I was saying, if it affects 5% of the projects, that means that there is going to be an apprentice that is lacking an opportunity. So what I'm saying is simply this: for me personally, anything that restricts an opportunity for a person to be able to participate on a city project, we're doing that person a disservice, even if it's 1, 2, or 3. I think that we should really look at that before we make our decisions on this issue. And that's just my personal opinion. And I'm happy to look at the data, and I'm happy to sit on that fair contracting forum. I'd love to be invited. Thank you.
Fair enough. Thank you. Appreciate it. So now we're in public testimony. How many do we have signed up for public testimony?
I have still about 8 right now.
All right. And it is now about 1:20. So we have about 25 minutes. Could people, we'll give you 3, but if you could do 2, we'll give you a bonus point. So try to keep as close to 2 minutes as you can. And I will absolutely cut you off at 3, just because we are on a very, very tight ship today. Why don't you read the first 3, and then I've got a housekeeping item.
Okay, the first 3 are Shedrick Wilkins, Brandon Mayfield, and James L. Posey.
Please come on up. Folks, obviously we're running out of time, and our council sessions are going to run into each other. So item 1204, the Veterans Day Proclamation, is being moved to tomorrow, November 9th, time certain 2 p.m. Item number 1217, which authorizes a competitive bidding solicitation and contract with lowest responsible bidder for the St. John's Cathedral Park sewer rehab, that will be moved to tomorrow, November 9th, on the regular agenda. Item number 1219, to amend public improvements codes on permits through PBOT, that will be moved to next Wednesday, November 15th, at the regular agenda items. Do you want to call 2 more people up?
Yeah, I think some people have left. Let's go with Bill Kowalski.
Mr. Posey, no one wants to sit at the table.
Vanessa Enos.
Okay, very good. Mr. Posey, please.
Yes. Thank you. Good afternoon, Mayor and City Council. Listen, I really do appreciate the opportunity. I'm always coming before you, and unfortunately, I didn't have time to read everything that was in the resolutions, but I've seen that you all have sort of split the baby, which is not necessarily bad. You know, you got the deal. But I would implore you to really look at your previous testimony and see if you're just getting one side of the story. There's always two sides of the story. There's national perspectives. When people talk about CBAs and how effective they are, then there's another side. I would just implore you, just take your time and look what's happened in Philadelphia and California. And if you really take a real sharp look at what's been occurring through these whole processes, people were shooting you information based upon a script that they've been programming for the last several years. I've been here. I've seen it. Nick, you know what's been going on. Everybody knows what's going on. So let me just talk a little bit about really this threshold deal. Really, minority contractors small minority contractors can't get into the system because of the bureaucratic craziness that's been imposed upon them. They have almost the same requirement at $100,000 contracting as some of the big guys. So there's no scale of how it is for you to matriculate through this program. So if you really want to do something about helping minority contractors, you should reduce the barriers, the economic barriers across the board for minority contractors. Give them a pathway to get in. I'll give you an example. When I started out, if I had to be a union contractor, I would be dead in the water because I had to do everything. I had to drive the truck. I had to put the asphalt down. I had to do everything, cook, bottle washer. These union deals constrain you to a position where you can only be locked into certain categories, and you all know that. So if you really are looking at this thing, I'm talking about, look at it from a common sense standpoint. The more you put on these people, the less they're going to be able to perform. That said, The other key piece is the lumping. This DBE, MBE. I've asked you guys to disaggregate those numbers, so let us see what is really going on. Is any of these dollars getting back to communities for real? And my contention is that it's going to many of the fronts that are out here, white women who are in the DBE category, who are professing to do this and do that. These jobs are, this money is not getting back, some call it trickle down. That's not happening. The second thing I want to say is you have an auditor. She's giving you reports on how these programs have benefited everybody. You don't need to create new commissions and boards and all that other stuff. You don't spend public dollars to do what you're already doing and you already help people.